Let me ask you a question. How much time have you spent seeking out self-help? How many books have you bought and maybe even actually read? Gurus have you listened to? Episodes of Oprah have you watched? Cosmo or Maxim magazines have you flipped through? Seeking a change in your life you desperately want and not really attaining it. All of these things could work and yet, in most cases, do not. That's the paradox of life. My name is Rayanna. We will uncover and ask the tricky questions, unabashed by political correctness. I may not have all the answers, but we will dig deep. We can laugh about the silliness of people and complain about the ridiculousness of life. One thing I've learned, you can't be all things to everyone, but I know for sure that you must be true to yourself. Welcome to the Just Be You podcast.
The club isn't the best place to find the lovers, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends sat at the table doing shots, drinking fast, and then we talk slow. And you come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind.
Welcome. Slightly different episode for episode 10 of the Just Be You podcast. I'm really excited to have my producer, Dana Buckler, here with me. Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ray. How are you today?
Good. So Dana does the How Is This Movie podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts, not just because I'm your friend, but because I really love the way you tell stories and you like the same movies I do. So that's helpful.
Well, part of that is, I think that was how we met, is we were actually both working at the same job when we met, and we were sort of discussing what we do besides, you know, the job we're doing, which it's what I do for a living is actually a closely guarded secret. I've never spoke about it on the show.
Yes, so, we won't disclose it.
But you had mentioned to me that you had just moved here from California and that you had a career in radio.
I did. I spent 10 years in radio. I was the promotions director for 4 stations, the top station in our area, and 3 other ones. And I managed all of our promotions. And then I had a radio show on at night, which was so fun. And I used to basically not get paid for it, but it's where all of my passion came from. So all day long, I toiled over these $1 million promotions. And then in the evening, I was on the radio speaking to listeners, trying to give them a leg up on life. And so that's very much like what I'm trying to channel into my podcast today. It's, you know, not self-help. It's more of like my opinion on how to get your shit together.
Absolutely. And so what was funny is I mentioned to you, well, oh, you do radio. Oh, well, I have a podcast. But I did it very, very humbly. I was like, oh, well, I do a podcast because, you know, the differences between radio and podcasting, of course, there's, you know, the famous story of Howard Stern saying that podcasts are never going to make it and it's a fad.
And here we are.
And, yeah. You know, here we are. And so I just kind of humbly said, well, I do a podcast about movies and film history. You should check it out. And you did. And that's kind of how we became friends. And then I think a few months later, you had mentioned you wanted to do a podcast. And I said, well, I'm here to help. I've got all the equipment. I've got everything, you know, I think we need. And I certainly have almost 4 years of me trial and error experience to offer you.
And you have been invaluable. So thank you, actually, just publicly. I just want to thank you your time and attention. And it's been very meaningful. And I never take it for granted. And that's why I'm so excited to have you on the show, because you always tell me these great stories about stuff that doesn't quite make it to your podcast. And so I thought, maybe my podcast would be a great place for us to talk about the things that aren't quite movie related.
I'm on board. I'm on board because, yes, for listeners of my show, I have told a number of, for the lack of a better term, bad theater going experiences. I mean, that's basically what it was. But my life, unfortunately, sort of encompasses a lot more bad experiences that aren't just theater related.
And
I'm kind of known in my circle of friends as being a very good storyteller, but unfortunately, most of the stories that I tell revolve around me having these really could only happen to Dana experiences.
I know. That's your next podcast. Could only happen to Dana podcast.
Well, yeah. I was working on the idea of doing a podcast called The True Story of Dana. And just leaving it at that, it's self-explanatory.
It might make it. Some of these stories we're going to tell today might even make that cut. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So anyway, my goal today is for us to talk about sort of relationships, because so much of my podcast is about love, relationships, sex, tongue-in-cheek, unpolitically correct stuff, you know, stuff like that. So I know that you have some stories. I heard one on your podcast one time about the girl you went out on a date with.
So, okay, so where that comes from is, you know, if we're talking about relationships, of course, to get into a relationship, you have to start dating. And
well, right.
That's kind of like, you know, and I've always said that dating's kind of like the job application. You know, you fill out everything, you tell the person everything about you, and you hope you get the job, you know, which is the relationship. But I have always sort of been a strong proponent of, well, I've actually been strongly against the dinner and a movie for the first date. For the first date, because I'm one of those people, I like to conversate. I like to have lots of conversation with people. And, well, maybe that's not actually the case.
Oh, dear. Okay.
It could actually be something happened when I did a dinner and a movie about 12. Well, no.
You're bruised. You're bruised.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear the story.
So this would have been 8 years ago. This would have been 2009. And I've told this story on the podcast. So for my podcast listeners, I'll do sort of an abbreviated version of the story. Long story short, I met a girl, asked her out on a date. We went to Carrabba's, if I remember correctly. That was the restaurant we went to here in town.
Fancy.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, you know, I spared no expense, you know. So,
okay.
Well, they had, you know, they had the pick two for 20.
No,
combo.
It's perfect.
Had,
yeah, okay, no, that's Applebee's, but.
Of course, I'm joking.
Yeah, I know.
And I used a fake name, and I'll use another fake name. We'll just call her Jennifer for this particular episode, but that wasn't actually her name.
Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Jennifer, if you're listening, well.
She's not, don't worry.
She's probably not.
Yeah, she doesn't do podcasts.
Probably not. So. We were at dinner for about an hour and a half. I thought we had a great conversation, and you know what? I think we were getting along pretty well. And then we were, of course, going to a movie. That was the next plan. Now, the movie we had selected was The Hangover, which, of course, you know, I've never done an episode on The Hangover, but I think the first Hangover film is fantastic.
It is fantastic.
It's lightning in a bottle that, mm-hmm. unfortunately,
just didn't
they weren't
translate
able to,
to the rest. Yeah.
Well, they weren't able to recapture that magic with the subsequent sequels. I paid for dinner. When we got to the theater, we went to the box office. Now, chivalry is not lost on me. It was my intention to pay for the movie. And we got up to the box office. I said, two for The Hangover. And as I was trying to give my credit card, she plopped hers down and paid for the movie.
Oh,
and
we're
she
going
said,
Dutch. Got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I said, no, you don't have to do that. Please, I'd like to do this for you. And she says, no, you paid for dinner. It's the very least I can do. She said, if you want any concessions, it's on me as well. And I said, well, I was good. I was fine. I think I'd had a couple glasses of wine at dinner, so I was good. We get into the theater. We sit down. Movie starts. And, you know, within 3 or 4 minutes, there's a lot of laughs in that film. And something happened. She was enjoying the movie a little bit more than I think anyone else in the theater. Because she was laughing at such a high
you
audible
don't
think level.
She was nervous?
No, I don't think she was nervous because she started yelling at the screen. Every time a joke, like every time something would happen on screen, she would either repeat what they said or call out what was happening. Like that scene where the character of Alan when mm-hmm. he's getting tailored for his tuxedo. And he drops his pants and you see his ass. And she just yells out, oh, my God, you can see his ass. Look at that. Look, you see his ass. And I'm just like, people are starting to turn around and look at me. And I'm like a guy who goes to the movies all the time by himself. I'm not used to having company. Certainly not used to going to the movies with people that
are embarrassing.
That are embarrassing. But she never stopped. She was just, you know, at one point, somebody yelled out in the theater, shut up.
Oh,
and
no.
She yelled back, why don't you shut up? And mind you, I am now buried into my seat. Like, I don't even know what's happening in the movie. I think they went to Las Vegas. I think so. But I was so mortified. And about 45 minutes into the film, I excused myself. I just politely whispered, I'm just going to go to the bathroom real quick. I'll be right back. She's, oh. And she goes, okay, really loud. And I get out there and I'm walking. I didn't have to go to the bathroom. I'm just pacing.
You're just
you know,
pacing the hallway?
I'm pacing the hallway going, what do I need to do? This is really bad. I can't go back in there. I'm such a stickler for theater etiquette. And the person next to me, my date, is completely destroying the experience for not just me, but for everybody in the theater. And so I don't know what happened. I just looked at the exit doors. And like I said in the podcast, they were glowing. All of a sudden, they were glowing. And so I just said, well, fuck it. And I just walked. And I remember because with theater exit doors, once you go out them, you can't get back in because they have
the
crash.
Oh, yeah, they're one way.
They have a crash bar. Mm-hmm. And I just went out and I was gone. And I literally left my date during the opening weekend of The Hangover. And what I didn't think about was sort of the bigger picture. She was a bartender at one of the bars that my friends and I like to frequent. And so, of course, I naturally had to find a new place to hang out. And, you know, the rumor started swirling that I was an asshole and that I had left Jennifer at the theater. Well, I failed to mention, we took our own cars.
Oh,
she
had a vehicle.
She had a vehicle. Now, I would have never left her stranded. I mean, maybe I would have. I mean,
you might have.
I might have. Honestly, I might have. But she had her own vehicle. We had met at Carrabba's, and we drove our own cars to the theater. And so, yeah, that was the last dinner and a movie. And I say that I don't think dinner and a movie, well, because, you know, you don't talk. You
I
don't
totally
get to know each
agree.
Other.
I mean, dinner and a movie is so not conducive to getting to know someone. You know, you can't discuss anything at a movie. I mean, I guess you did get to know Jennifer at that movie and decide that she breaks rules that are very important to you. So, I mean, that dinner in a movie was enlightening. But most of the time, dinner in a movie is, you know, you get a prequel and then you sit at the movies and you don't really know anybody.
So, yes. So
I agree.
So thank you. Thank you. I hope that most people do understand that, you know, there's theater etiquette that you're supposed to follow, and this one was not getting followed.
There is theater etiquette. And just like there's theater etiquette, there is etiquette in all areas of dating life, which is some of the stuff that I talk about, you know, is just that, you know. And so one of the things I want to talk about today is the fact that, you know, I don't mean this in any sort of disrespectful way, but you're in your, you know, mid to late 30s, you're like my age. And so for me, I have friends that are in their 20s and they're dating, and then I'm dating and I'm in my mid, you know, approaching 40. And I think the rules of dating have changed for us.
Well, I think they have changed in a long way. I mean, long gone, I think, is the thought of that we're supposed to, you know, marry 2.5 kids, you know, the White House with the picket fence, and, you know, that's...
Do you think that's generational? Because I see that a lot with our age group, is that we've decided that we don't need to get married right out of high school. We don't need to pop out a bunch of kids. We don't have to necessarily own homes.
Well, I'll argue that depends, I think, more on the geography of where this person lives. And I'm going to cite an example here. The town that we live in, Ocala, Florida, it's a town of about 55,000 people. It's 45 minutes north of Orlando. About 3 years ago, I came across an article that said the 50 worst cities to be single in America. Now, number one on that list was Yuma, Arizona. Well, I've never been to Yuma, Arizona.
Right.
Sounds hot.
It is hot.
But the number two on the list, and this one literally, I think I did a spit take with my coffee. It said Ocala, Florida. And I was just like, oh, my goodness. But then I started to think about it, because almost everyone I know in this town, and I've been here for 20 years now, almost everyone I know has either gotten married when they were really young and are now divorced, or they're still married and they got married at a very young age. Because I think that's kind of, when you live in a smaller town, I think that's kind of expected of you. But when you get to sort of the bigger cities, or, you know, the more...
No, you're right. Because I'm from California, you know, and so I moved here from just outside San Francisco. And there's a huge population of people that are my age, that are career minded, that are not having kids yet, that are, you know, just now thinking about getting married. And they spent the last 15 years sort of deciding what to do with themselves. And marriage wasn't on the list. You know, it wasn't... That wasn't the thing. But you're right. Small towns do sort of perpetuate that let's get married and have children mentality.
And so that, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying about why, like, I'm a single guy. You know, I've dated, obviously. I just told a story about dating. And I've been in some relationships throughout the years. But I think about, and I was one of those guys, I should say, that went from, I think, relationship to relationship to relationship in my 20s and then my early 30s. And I think
Serial monogamist.
And then by the time I was about 35, 36 years old, okay, I'm 39. For those wondering how old I am,
I'm
39.
All right, there we go. Cat out of the bag.
I realized that I would think I was in relationships just for the sake of being in a relationship. I wasn't, you know, because I think that's what we were supposed to be doing.
Right.
But then I realized, after the last relationship, that I think I just want to be single for a little while. Well, that little while has been like 3-4 years now, and I'm fine. I'm okay with that, because I'm so focused on what I want to do now. And I wish I would have had that drive 15 years ago, because who knows where we would be right now.
I know, you'd be the next Howard Stern or something along those lines.
So I got so focused on the fact that I want to get into some type of radio, and I think podcasting is radio. It's radio on demand. It needs a different name than podcast, because that's exactly what it is.
Smart people listen to podcasts, just so we're clear.
Absolutely. Yeah. That means that everybody listening is an incredibly intelligent person.
And I love our listeners.
Absolutely. They're awesome. So that doesn't mean that I'm not, I mean, of course, if the right person was to just come up in my life all of a sudden, I would probably make a concerted effort to get to know that person. but I'm not actively looking. I mean, not to be fair, I did try some dating apps for a little while there.
All right, good. So. Oh, I love this. This is what we're going to talk about next.
Okay,
I'm glad you got there. So you tried dating apps, like mobile apps, like online dating?
Yeah, I did. I did. You know, most people do. I've had, you know, a lot of friends who have met people. And I'm talking about people my age. I'm not talking about a 22-year-old that met a 23-year-old and they're wildly in love and they're going to get married after after a month of getting married. After a month of meeting, they're wildly in love and they're going to get married. No, I'm talking about people my age who, through the power of dating apps, met people that were very similar to them and had, you know, very common interests. And, you know, they would do what I call the long form dating, where, you know, talk on the phone for weeks before they even agree to meet. And, you know, by the time you actually do meet, you feel like you've got to know this person. But that hasn't happened to me just yet, because unfortunately, my experiences on dating apps have been, well, not good. And I think partly that has to do with where I live, but also I'm not good at sort of identifying characteristics about people via their profile on their dating app.
All right, so I'm going to assume that you don't use Tinder and that swipe right is not a term that we're going to use on this show, which is good.
No,
right? You're not a Tinder person.
No, I've never had a Tinder.
Tinder is for young people. So we're going to avoid Tinder, but I just got to throw it out there.
Of course.
Tinder exists, right?
Yeah, Tinder exists, you know.
My head of a 26-year-old friend in California who, like, 2 days after I left my ex-husband was like, you gotta get on Tinder, and she signed me up, right? So then all of a sudden I was, like, swiping left a lot.
Right.
But apparently you're supposed to swipe right to get dates, so I failed at Tinder. But so I'm assuming you use something like Match or eHarmony or something like that, right?
Yeah, in most cases it was the Match.com is what I used.
Match.com, I was reading a statistic. I wish I had it in front of me. I should look it up. It's they have a $4 billion, there's a $4 billion online dating industry out there, right? So they're making a lot of money on it. So, I mean, it's safe to assume that there must be something coming out of it, right? Some success coming out of it. Otherwise, nobody would sign up.
Well, like I said, I mean, I have a lot of friends that have found success through online dating. This is not computer dating of the 1980s or the early 90s. You know, this is completely different. This is, I mean, all, really.
It's come a long way.
What the Match.com is, it's just another version of social media. I mean, you have a profile, you list your everything about you, and you just have an opportunity to contact people, but it's for a specific reason.
Right. So I have a lot of respect for online. I don't want this to come off like I am bashing online dating is my point, is that I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it or anything. So, but I do know that you have alluded to a great story that we can't quite fit into your show. So I really want to get it on this show about online dating.
Well, there's a couple stories. The first one is, let this be a cautionary tale. And make sure that you really understand who you're talking to. Now, this was probably about 2 years ago. I was chatting with someone. We'll just call them Kelly for whatever.
All right. How old was Kelly?
Kelly, I think, was a couple years older than me. Because
really?
At the time, I would have been 36 or 37. And I think Kelly was 39 or maybe 40, if I remember correctly.
All right. Tell us about Kelly.
And Kelly and I... She actually messaged me. She sent me a communication on Match.com because I wasn't one of those guys that every night I'm like, okay, who's next? Who am I going to find?
You weren't fishing.
I would literally like set a profile up there and then a month later be like, I've got a Match.com. I should check that. You know, like that's how little I really paid attention to it. And then I get an email notification that Kelly has sent me a message, and she sends me a message, you know, hi, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. And I correspond and I go back and forth and we start chatting. The first day it was like, hi, how are you? Good. Oh, you know, my name's Dana. My name's Kelly. Great. Nice to meet you. Hope you're having a good day. Gotta go. That type of thing. Next day she sends me a message. And over the course of like 2 weeks, we start really chatting back and forth. You know, eventually we take the logical next step, and that is exchange phone numbers. And we start texting back and forth again for like 2 or 3 days. We're texting back and forth, and you know, we're sending a couple pictures. And when I say a couple pictures, I mean she's sending a picture of her at the beach. She's sending a picture of her, you know, Disney World or something like that. And I'm sending a picture of her when I was in Las Vegas. Like nothing salacious or nothing, you know.
Right. Like, normal pictures like of like what you're doing. Right.
Yeah.
Like, got it.
Completely normal. Completely harmless. And then on about the
stuff your mom could see.
Exactly.
Right.
So on like the last night that we were chatting on the, we were texting back and forth, she made a comment. She goes, do you want to see a different type of picture? And I said, well, what's a different type of picture?
I mean, you're a guy.
I kind of know where this is going. And I just said, well, you know, we don't need to go down that road. You know, that's not something that, you know, she, you know, because from, I would figure most girls don't like that type of thing. They don't like a guy to certainly ask, hey, send me some pictures. But she's offering. So I just said, well, fuck it. I said, okay, sure. Send me a picture. And so she sends me a picture of her and she's wearing a bikini top. Okay. But it's just a picture. It's basically saying, hey, here's what I look like in a bikini. So she sends me the picture. My eyes immediately go to the picture. But what I don't realize is that she has sent this picture to me in a group text.
Oh, no.
With three other phone numbers. And I said, now, wait a second. Did she just send a picture of herself, a picture of herself to me in a group text? Did she? Wait a second. She's group texting me with other people. That means I could get.
Bing, bing, bing.
And no sooner did I realize what was going on than all of a sudden I started getting these pictures from the other phone numbers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not really going to describe what these pictures were because I quickly deleted
them. Can I?
Well, yeah. I mean, yes, of course.
You just got dick pics.
I did. And I was like, what? I was like, holy shit. And so I send her a text message, just her. And I said, did you just send me a picture in a group text? Why would you do that? She said, well, I'm talking to like three other people at the same time, and I just thought I'd send everybody the picture at once. I said, do you have any idea what that caused? I gotta go.
And that was that.
And we were done.
I'm sorry, what was it? Kelly? Kelly was done?
Kelly was done.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So
moral of the story is, do not group text any potential suitor with a bikini topped picture of yourself, because it's rude.
Not only that, but I then had to go through the painstaking process of blocking each one of those phone numbers.
Yeah, because now you're in a group text. So many times
I'm in a group
they
text.
Do
so,
it, yeah.
So, you know,
so you had to save them, actually, and then block them.
There's a feature where you can leave the message, leave the group message. I left the group message, and then I had to block all of these phone numbers because I didn't want any of that shit to ever come back. I was like, what?
So. Oh, dear Lord. That is, that's not awesome. That is not awesome.
No, it's a story I've told you before, and it's one of those very humbling stories. And I've told a few people. It's like, oh, goodness.
And when you told me this story, my immediate response was, oh, my God, when can we get that on your podcast? And it just never quite fit. So that story is really the reason I ever even started a podcast, so that I could have that story on air, just so you know.
The type of photo bombing that I received
photo bombing
is one that I don't wish on my worst enemy. So, and it's amazing how quickly you can go out of focus when a picture comes, like, oh, okay. Oh, you know,
didn't
all of a sudden,
see that.
All of a sudden,
yeah,
your eyes quickly cross and you're like, oh, I don't know what that is. So,
all right. So there's, is there another online dating story?
Well, this one's a little more interesting in the fact that this is somebody I met in person.
Okay.
So we'll call this person Rebecca. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. So this would have been back 4 or 5 years ago, and this would have been before the podcast started, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Before I had, I like to say before I had real meaning in my life, okay?
Right. I get that.
I'm a huge football fan. It's kind of what I live for come football season. You know, it started in the early 90s, you know, and I just grew up watching college football, watching NFL. And I used to say, people say, well, why do you love football so much? And I'd say, well, when you get into your 30s and you realize that all your hopes and dreams are never going to come true, you just get behind a football team. And that's that gives your life meaning. So subsequently, back then, I would say,
unless
that,
you're a Browns fan.
Yeah. Well,
just no, just saying.
Sorry, Cleveland. Yeah, so,
you're burnt.
So. Okay. So the thing for me was those Sundays, I used to call them football Sundays. And a football Sunday for me would start at 1 o'clock in the morning, would start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, and it would go to about 11 o'clock at night. There was football games all in between.
Absolutely.
And I would drink a lot of beer on those days.
Very good. Beer and football.
Yeah, beer and football. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I did every Sunday during football season. So I get talking to this girl I meet online through a dating app, and I'd had a bit to drink this particular Sunday, and I don't know if the courage sort of came over me, but I said, you know, we should meet. Now, I should say this
very
like,
cavalier of
I should,
you.
I said, yeah, we should hang out sometime, because that's about, you know, I had lots of beer that particular day. And she said, well, why don't you come over to my house? And I said, well, why not? And so I find myself driving. Thankfully, she didn't live too far from where I live.
Right, because you've been drinking.
I had been drinking. And this is, again, a cautionary tale why you should never do this type of thing. And I get to her house, and she's got a football game on. Great.
Oh, we like that.
We like that. You know,
I'm
into her living room. All the lights are off except for the light coming from the TV. And so I'm sitting on a couch, and I'm sitting next to her. And we talk for about 20 minutes, and then we just start making out. I guess that's kind of why she asked me to come over. And,
I think
you know,
so.
And
I'm sorry, what's her name? Rebecca?
I think we're calling her Rebecca.
Okay.
And so,
she's a floozy.
We're making out. And I don't know how to describe it, but I felt something walk across the back of my shoulders, across the back of my neck.
Like a bug?
Like, no, bigger than that. Like it had some weight.
Like an animal?
Like, yeah, it had some weight to it.
But not a dog?
No, definitely not a dog.
Like a little animal?
Like a little animal.
Okay.
Okay, so I just kind of, it kind of freaks me out. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa.
You had been drinking a lot, so?
I said, Rebecca. See, you have a cat? Do you have a cat here?
A little kitten?
Little kitten. That's literally what I said. Okay. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, something just crawled all over the back of my shoulders. I said, you've got a kitten or a cat or something? And she goes, oh my God, one got out. And I said, one got out?
One what?
I said, wait a second. What are you talking about? And she jumps up and she runs over and she flicks the lights on in the living room. I turn around and behind the couch I'm sitting in is a wall of cages.
What?
A wall of cages.
Oh my God.
And one cage had this little, you know, 6 by 6 inch little door, and it was just, it was open. And I
so is it a mouse?
Well, I
she
looked.
Rats?
I looked, and it was squirrels. And she had all these baby squirrels and full-size squirrels. I said, what's going on here?
She keeps squirrels?
I said, you have pet squirrels? I said, is that legal? Are you allowed to have that?
No.
And she goes, one of them got out. Help me find him. I'm like, help you find him. I'm getting the fuck out of here. What is going on? I don't know what kind of animals you've got in the other room.
Right.
I've been getting the hell
squirrels
out of here.
In the living room.
And so I was gone. And so I'm sort of 0-2 with my dating experiences on using match.com, the squirrel lady and the group texter.
Yeah, the group texter. Okay. All right. So let me ask you a question. Do you think that the rules for casual dating, which is anything pre, like, long-term committed relationship, right? We're not talking about one-night stands, but casual dating for adults, right? Do you think the rules are different for men than they are for women in our 30s?
Well, define what you think the standard traditional rules are. Give me a definition.
Well, I mean, I see a lot of things happen with people in general is that they start dating, they have a couple of good dates, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I have to be in this relationship now. And really, that's a misnomer. That's not true. You know, we're capable of having a relationship with someone and not necessarily moving in and playing house with each other, right? So where are the lines there? What do you think, in your perspective as a man, right? Because I'm not a man. I have no perspective on that. What do you think the rules or challenges are for like, what is dating? What is dating? That's a great question, actually, now that I think about it. What is dating to you?
Dating is a big conspiracy set up by restaurants
and Disney.
And Disney and everything like that. Dating is a – you want to talk about – you talk about the online dating and that type of thing being a $4 billion industry.
Right. I mean, it's commercialized.
Dating as a whole is probably a multi-trillion dollar industry in this country because in order to go on a date with someone, it requires spending money.
Right.
And there's rules set up in place on, you know, where you're supposed to go and what you're supposed to do.
Right, and how much it's supposed to cost.
Absolutely.
You can't take them to McDonald's because then you're cheap ass.
But you can't go super, super high end.
Because then you're just showing off you're a schmuck.
Exactly.
And, right, then you're a sugar daddy and she's got to be 15 years younger than you and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So
I could ramble.
So the thing about that is every relationship I've ever gotten in, I don't think there was ever a first date involved. I think there was, I met someone, we had a great conversation the first time we met. We said we should hang out again sometime, and we met at a very casual setting, mm-hmm. be it a bar or a coffee shop, or, you know, we worked together or something of that matters. And I think about every relationship I've ever been in, and I can honestly say not one of them ever involved a first date, a dinner and a movie. So I don't necessarily know if I'm the one to answer that question about
have the rules
of dating changed.
And you know why? Because you're normal. You're a regular person.
Well, I like to think so.
Anybody that's an expert on dating is obviously not who I want to ask. I mean, kind of. Does that make sense?
Because we suffer
from the same issues that everyone else suffers from. The experts on dating, they don't need any help.
No, they're perfect.
Right.
That's why, and they're going to, for $150, they're going to explain to you why they're perfect.
Exactly.
The thing with me is, I would say that, okay, let me say this again. Have I taken girlfriends out to dinner? Absolutely. But I didn't do the traditional courting that we're supposed to be doing. I don't know if I'm necessarily opposed to it. It's just not something that I think is necessary. I think when you meet somebody you really connect with, if you both connect with each other, it's kind of known right away. You kind of
get that. So it's organic.
It's organic.
Exactly.
I'll agree with you on that.
So it's organic, and you sort of get to know each other, become friends. There's not like a sort of, hey, I like you from across the room. Will you go out on a first date with me?
Yeah.
That's the stuff that we experienced that misled us when we were young.
Absolutely. Because I don't want to go out to dinner with anyone that I'm not comfortable with.
That I don't already know a little bit.
That's exactly it. You want to be very comfortable around people. I think that's why I don't think I've ever asked a girl out on a date that, besides the dinner and movie one.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But we, you know, and that was, I think that was, you know, the universe telling me this was a bad idea. This is why you're never going to do that again.
And that actually makes a lot of sense to me. I'm glad you said that. And that'll probably make its way back into one of my other podcasts, right? Is that the first date is actually an illusion. I mean, you might go out for the first time and have a memorable experience, but you had all of these sort of interactions beforehand that built a foundation for why you're even out with them the first time. And for me, there has to be a friendship established. There has to be some sort of a rapport.
And not only that, there has to be a common interest that's been established.
Correct.
So I couldn't imagine going to a 2-hour dinner with somebody who hated all the things that I loved.
Right. That would be stupid.
What do you talk about? And if you're on that first date, how do you, like, you say, well, my favorite movie's Jaws. And they say, oh, that movie's terrible. I hate that movie. That's awful. And I'd be like, okay, well, this is never going to go any further than this.
Yes.
So why am I wasting my time?
Exactly.
So I think there's sort of a prerequisite checklist that you need to go through with an individual. And the only way you're going to, you know, mark things off that checklist is talking to this person and getting to know them and spending time in casual environments with no pressure.
Right.
That's the key, I think.
Right. I agree completely. So one of the things I was reading an article about online dating earlier today where I saw the $4 billion online dating industry stat, which blew me away. But it's that online dating has created this in the same way that social media, right? I have social media. I love social media. It's done a lot for us as far as, you know, I never would have had relationships with my half brothers and sisters if I didn't have social media, because we always lived 3,000 miles apart, right? And
right.
And we weren't going to be pen pals, and we didn't really know each other that well. So now we share pictures.
If I could say just one thing about the power of social media,
mm-hmm.
when I moved here in 1998, social media was not existed. It wasn't even thought of.
Nope.
And there was the girl I left behind in Canada, and her name was, fuck it, her name's Megan, and I'm not ashamed to say it, that was her name, and I really liked her, but I needed to move to Florida. An opportunity presents itself to move to Florida, you know, from Canada legally,
right?
With permanent resident status. Like my dad said, you're sitting on a lottery ticket. If you got an opportunity to move to the U.S. legally, take it. So I took it. She couldn't come. Now, I say all of this because social media didn't exist. Skype didn't exist. Cell phones for me didn't exist. So communicating with her once we left, was almost non-existent, unless I was prepared to rack up a $600 a month phone bill.
You might have.
Which
once.
I did.
Okay.
Which
I did. Heard that in that.
And then I needed to, you know, then he needed to buy calling cards.
Calling cards.
On stuff. And so, you know, we couldn't talk every day. And of course, we just kind of faded away. Right. Now, I wonder what would have been had this happened a year ago, when we could have Skyped, chatted each other, and seen each other every day and talked every day. So when you say social media has changed everything, and I think in relationships it really has too. I mean, it's the ultimate communicator. I mean, it really keeps we're so connected, too connected.
Exactly. There was a grimace across my face when we said that. Yeah. So too connected sometimes, too exposed, a little bit of oversharing going on in so many aspects of our lives, from group texting to, you know, your life is perfect on the outside of social media and then rotten on the inside. But, you know, that's something for another show. But what I saw in this article was a statement about how online dating has made it so that you're more concerned with how you look on paper, like a job interview. And you said that earlier, you know, and so it's about how good can I make my profile look to get as many hits as possible, when the reality is we're not exposing our true authentic selves. You know, we're putting just what is most appealing. And so I think that online dating causes issues, because then it takes longer to sort of uncover the garbage, you know, or the, you know, the...
And what's interesting, you say that, because I'm one of those people, like, I'm 39. I grew up at a time before text messaging was the standard form of communication for all of us.
We used to have to use a phone.
Yeah, and I'm still a phone talker.
Plugged into the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A little shout out to your very first episode.
Exactly.
So I'm one of those people that likes to talk on the phone. I like to talk. People tell me all the time, Dan, you
Dana
shut
likes
up.
To talk? Yes, weird. I didn't know that about you.
I like to talk. So if I meet someone on one of these online dating things, the quicker I can get into a phone conversation to see if we have any chemistry.
Right.
Because with text messaging, I kind of have a bit of a sarcastic sense of humor about me, which does not come across at all.
Tone doesn't translate.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
That's true.
And using things like LOL or ha ha ha, or now emojis.
Emojis
are helping a little bit. But with the way people communicate, like I remember about a year and a half ago being on one of these online dating things, and we got to the texting part, and I said, well, can I give you a call? She goes, oh, I'd rather text. Why would you want to call? Why would you want to talk? And I said, well, how old are you again? She said, well, I'm 29. I said, well, that's it right there.
It's amazing the difference 10 years will make on people, you know, so that's true. So true. Okay, so for women dating in their 30s, right, we have a couple of things going against us. I don't know if this is the same for men, but for women in your mid to late 30s or early 40s, I imagine, men that are single or just getting divorced want a younger woman. And you somehow get skipped over, right? So men that are in their early 40s, they now want a 25-year-old. And you're like, hey, I'm 36, you know. And so that poses a problem. And then actually younger men want an older woman to teach them everything, right? So some of the stuff that's changed for women dating in their 30s, either because they've never been married or they're coming out of a divorce, is that either only young men want you and really you're mature and you're looking for somebody more mature, but the mature men are looking for young, dumb, and fun. So it poses this huge problem. Our pool to draw from, like, shrinks drastically. Then if you're like me and you have, like, maybe a teenager and a Pomeranian, that's like two strikes against you already, you know. So, you know, it's fascinating. So are there things like that that happen for men who are 38 or 39? I mean...
And it's, you know, again, I cannot be used as the sort of the sample size of this discussion, in the sense that I like to have conversations with people that, you know, I'll say it, okay, I don't want to date anyone that's between the ages of 18 and 28, because I don't feel like, now, would I be attracted to someone between the ages of 20, 28, you know, and absolutely. But that attraction eventually... I don't want to say you get desensitized to an attraction, and then there has to be a sort of a mental compatibility.
Right.
And I don't feel like, again, I need to keep backtracking here. It's just, I don't like the person I was when I was in my 20s. I really like the person I am now because I know I'm never going to know. And I know that I'm never going to know everything.
Right. But in our 20s, we thought we knew everything.
But I came to that realization a couple of years ago, and that was life changing for me. That was sort of like, wow, you're never going to know it all. But man, look how much you've learned. Imagine what you're going to learn 10 years from now.
Exactly.
So when I find myself in a conversation with a girl that's in her, you know, early 20s, there's a physical attraction.
Not an intellectual compatibility.
And this is not me saying I'm the smartest person in the world, because I'm far from it. But I want to be able to have a conversation with somebody, right. You know, and so I look to women that are, you know, 35 and above. That's kind of usually because I want to date somebody that's got experience.
Right.
That's experienced life. Now,
so you're the exception rather than the rule.
I would say I'm definitely the exception, because most of my friends, again, not going to mention names, but a lot of my guy friends, you know, that's not even true either, because I tend to run in circles of people that are like-minded individuals.
But a lot of the people you see that you work with, maybe at the job that of which we will not disclose, right? You see people that are younger than you or your age or older that are dating, you know, massively younger women just for the fun of it.
Absolutely.
Not because they want intellectual compatibility. And to me, that just says that they don't want anything long term, you know, because there's nothing long term without intellectual compatibility in my mind.
It could be they just don't want to have to work very hard.
Okay, good point.
You know, that could be it. Maybe these guys that are in their late 40s or something like that, you know, they say, you know,
they just need an ego boost.
I put so much work into this marriage, and I don't want to have to think about it.
I just wanted to dote over me
exactly.
Call it a day.
So I'm not saying I don't understand the logic behind that for these people. It's just not something that I subscribe to.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So obviously rules have changed. I mean, we're not in the same time period where it was apparent that, I mean, women work now. So we have money in our bank accounts. We have bank accounts. All of that has changed in the last 100 years. It just wasn't like that before.
Correct.
So do you see a change in the way women expect or are okay with paying?
I haven't really seen that change just yet.
Okay.
You know, but I'm not necessarily sure that, well, you know, when I go out with friends, you know, if I go out with a friend of mine that's a girl, sometimes I'll just pick up the tab just because. Because
you're a nice guy.
Yeah, just because. And I think that if I was to ever ask a woman out on a date, yeah, I think I would probably
expect to pay.
Yeah, I would plan on paying for it. You know, just like if I invited somebody out to have dinner with me.
So how do you feel about a woman who insists on paying half? Like, that was a big thing for a while. I don't know. I heard it all over the radio. It was like men were offended. Some men were offended if a woman insisted on paying half, like she's too manly. And then some men were like, you need to pay half because we're out together and you should foot half of the bill. Or,
well, I've never been one of those people that has said, you know, you need to pay your fair share.
Okay.
But, you know, if I'm out with a girl and I know her, and obviously we've established that if I'm out with a girl, I know her. We're comfortable with each other. So if she insists on paying half,
you know, probably know that that's just how she is.
That's how she is. And okay. I'll try to counter that insistence with saying, no, let me just go ahead and get this and you can get next time. And then I'll always pick up the tab every time. But but when I was in a relationship, like in a hardcore relationship with a girl, then sometimes it would just be like, okay, yeah, you go ahead and get it. That's fine. Because, you know, that's, we were in a relationship.
Because you were shared. Got it.
But, it, you know, it needs to be established, I think.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, the parameters aren't 100% laid out.
Right, right.
Sometimes women are expecting when it might not necessarily even be a date.
I don't know, but I can tell from the way your eyebrows are raised right now that there's a story here. So just give it to me. Give it to me, Dana.
This is an interesting story because...
Has this been on your podcast?
This has not been on my podcast.
All right.
Oh, it came close to being on a podcast once, but I didn't tell this story. And just bear with me, because this one takes a few minutes to tell. And listeners, just bear with me. But this would have been about, see, it's 2017. This would have been about 2004.
Okay.
Now, to understand 2004, that was 13 years ago. I was 26 years old. I wasn't the most responsible person when it came to money. Like most people my age. Well, no.
Right.
Not, you know,
I mean,
you're
in your 20s.
You know, I was literally, you know, my friends and I, we kind of, hate to say the term, we kind of lived the party. you know, we were all working at restaurants, and you know, we would make money cash every night, and we'd go to the bar, and
you'd spend it.
You'd spend it, no, because there was an endless supply, because every day you would just go make more money.
Right.
Now, I say I wasn't the best with money. My bills were getting paid and things like that. I wasn't, you know, I don't think I was a deadbeat by any means of the, you know, situation, but I wasn't flush with cash, yeah, per se.
You weren't rolling in the dough.
I wasn't saving for my retirement.
Understood.
So I find myself at a Bennigan's restaurant. And for the younger listeners, Bennigan's was a casual dining restaurant throughout America that closed about 10 years ago.
So is that like an Applebee's?
Kind of like an Applebee's. Okay. This particular Bennigan's was open till 2 in the morning, and it had a bar.
Like
and,
Applebee's.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where all the restaurant workers would go. And I was going there for years. And, you know, you'd see the same faces every night, and, you know, you would get to know them. They were called your Bennigan's friends. You know, not anybody you'd hang out with outside of there, but if you went there by yourself and you were sitting at the bar and you're sitting next to a couple of people that worked at Red Lobster, you knew they worked at Red Lobster, and so you could just sort of break out the conversation. So, were you guys busy tonight? Oh, yeah. How'd you do tonight? So, you had a whole set of Bennigan's friends. And there was this one particular girl, and we'll call her Laura for this story.
Hi, Laura.
Laura, hello.
Welcome to the show.
and I had casual conversations with Laura before, and this happened to be a slow night. I think it was a Tuesday night, and I found myself where it was just Laura and I sitting at the bar, and we're just sitting next to each other, and we're just casually talking, and we get on the subject of Orlando, which is, for those listening, it's only about 45 miles south of where we live,
right.
And we're talking about, in particular, sort of the tourist district of Orlando, which is International Drive. And this isn't the theme parks, everybody. This is like the tourist trap area where they've got the go-karts and the bungee jumping.
And the shops.
And the shitty helicopter rides and things like that. And it just so happened that Laura and I both had the next day off. So, I don't know. This was after a few beers, you know. And I think Laura said, well, we should go to Orlando tomorrow. I don't work tomorrow. You don't work tomorrow. Let's go to Orlando. And I said, well, fuck it. Let's go to Orlando. All right, cool.
Sounds fun.
Sounds like a good time. Like we're, this isn't an established date. This is not like, hey, I'd like to take you to Orlando and show you a great time. It was like, hey, fuck it. Let's just go.
Yeah, let's go have some fun. It's casual.
Yeah, why not? And so so she says, well, how are we going to do the driving? And I said, well, I'll tell you what. If you drive, I'll pay for the gas. And you have to take a toll road to get to Orlando. A faster way to get to Orlando is to take the turnpike, which, you know, there's tolls involved with that. And I said, well, I'll take care of the gas and I'll take care of the tolls if you drive. She says, deal. Okay, why don't you meet me here at 10 o'clock at the Bennigan's parking lot and we'll go. And sure enough, the next morning I woke up, a bit of a hangover, but, you know, I was like, I guess I'm going. And I showed up to the Bennigan's and I got in her car and we went to Orlando, and true to my word, we stopped at a gas station. I put $25 in her gas tank. I think that was during the $4 a gallon. You know, this was a year after the Iraq War started, so gas prices were $4 or $5 a gallon. So we go, and we establish that we're going to get something to eat first. And I happened to work at a Chili's at the time. Now, when you worked at a Chili's, you had what was called a Chili Head card. That particular card you could present at any Chili's in America, and you and a guest would get 50% off all of your food, just not alcohol. And so I had suggested to her, well, why don't we, there's a Chili's right there on International Drive. For the rest of the story, we're going to call it iDrive because that's how it's known. So
right.
There's a Chili's right there on iDrive. Why don't we go there? She says, great, cool. So we go to the Chili's, and we're planning on being there all day. And we've parked our car in a place that everything is in walking distance. So our server comes up and says, you know, would you guys like anything to drink? And I said, well, sure, any drink specials? And they went through this whole 2-for-1, everything's 2-for-1, except for bottled beer, shots, and super premiums. And I said, okay, well, I'll take a Bud Light. And
Laura, yeah.
And Laura says, well, I'll take a Grey Goose and Cranberry. And our server goes, okay, well, that's not a 2-for-1. She goes, oh, no big deal. And I'm not thinking anything of this.
Right.
Okay. She goes, oh, I don't care about that, but make it a double. I said, oh, okay, great. Okay, again, when the bill comes, I'm expecting that we're going to split this because we're not on a date.
Right.
So we're there for like an hour and a half, having some drinks, having some laughs, and the bill comes. And she doesn't move for it. She doesn't even look at it. I mean, she just, and so I kind of pick it up. And after all the discounts and everything, it was like $62 or something like that. And I just kind of look at her for a moment, and I don't know her well enough to be like, so,
are we splitting this?
Are we going to split this? And right. She's just kind of like, she's got her little makeup thing out, and she's like checking her lipstick and, you know, everything like that. And
oh my goodness.
I'm like, oh. I guess I'm paying the bill.
You're paying the bill.
Now, we mentioned earlier I wasn't great with money, and I didn't bring a hell of a lot of money with me. I think I brought $300. Like, that's, and that was all the money I had.
That was all the money you had.
That was all the money I had. And so I pay the bill, and I have to leave a decent tip because
you're in the service industry.
I'm in the service industry. And the kind of the rule of thumb with these Chili Head cards was you had better tip 20% of what the original bill would have been minus the tip out, minus the discount. So I gave him like a $25 tip. So we're at $77. I want you guys to start keeping track of this. Okay. So we leave there and we start walking and we go to this place called Wonderworks. Now, Wonderworks is kind of like, if you've ever been to one of these Ripley's Believe It or Not type of museums, you know, it's just a bunch of really poor, you know, optical illusions and things like that. And we go to the counter and the lady says, okay, well, that'll be $30. And again, Laura just kind of looks away, doesn't pay attention. Okay, well, I guess I'm paying for this. So
paying for this too.
So I go that, we spend an hour in Wonderworks, and then we leave there, and then we go to, I think, a TGI Fridays for a couple drinks. You know where this is heading. Okay, the bill comes. She doesn't even look at it.
Right.
And
so now we're at like $150?
We're at about $150, mm-hmm. okay?
No, I'm keeping track.
We're at about $175 because I paid for the gas. No, we're at about $180 because gas and toll. So okay. I've got about $120 left.
You're $120 left in the bag. Got
and
it.
I'm starting to feel like that guy. Remember the movie Half-Baked when Chappelle's taking that girl out? He's got a limited amount of money in that little cash register. Yeah. Cash symbol. Cha-ching. And so I say, well, if we're down here, I'd really like to do go-karts because they got some really kick-ass go-kart tracks here in Orlando. And they do. They've got some really, like, this is not some rinky-dinky type thing. Like, they have these ones that have these, like, three levels. You drive up hills and down, everything like that. And it was walking distance from the TGI Fridays, and we go up there. And I just want to do, like, a couple goes, like a couple laps. Right. All right? And we get up there, and the lady says, well, would you like to buy an armband? And I said, well, what's the armband? Well, the armband is unlimited everything at the park, but more importantly, it's unlimited go-karts for 3 hours. And I said, well, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do 3 hours of go-karts. I just want to do a couple laps. And Laura says, you know, we'll take two of them. And she goes, okay, great. And she brings it up. They were $30 a piece.
Yes,
so
they were.
So there's $60.
Okay, so now we've got $60 left.
So we're at like $240. Mm-hmm. So we've got $60 left right now.
Right.
Now, when we get into the go-karts, we strap in, and I'm like, I'm not Fast and the Furious type guy. Like, I'm not Rubens Racing, and I'm not, I'm just like, I just want to have a little fun. She, like, completely changes into Danica Patrick. Like, she puts the helmet on, and she looks at me, and she gives me this kind of, like, you're going down look. And I'm like,
I'm going to beat you.
I'm like, and there's a bunch of little kids, on there. And I'm just like, well, let's take it easy, you know. And these were like
fast
go-karts. So we go, and we're going, and she's behind me, and then she pulls up in front of me, and then I'm behind her. We're both coming into this really hairpin turn. And if she doesn't bump my go-kart and send me into the wall so she could make the turn and pass me.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I hit the wall with, like, a head-on, hit the wall, and my foot, which wasn't very secure, sort of bangs against the side of the go-kart. And I knew right then and there, like, I had just sprained my ankle. And I knew because when I was trying to push the gas, it hurt. Like, it hurt just to push the gas. So I'm slowly limping back into the pit area, if you will.
Right.
And the guy's like, oh, you still got like three more laps, because they would go like 5 minutes at a time. It's like, no, I got to get out. I hurt my ankle. I really hurt my ankle. I got to get off. And so he gets me off, and she's still out there. And so when the 5 minute interval is over, she pulls in, and I'm like limping. And she goes, are you okay? I said, no, I think I sprained my ankle. I said, you know, you really were kind of forceful out there. You kind of plowed me into the wall there. She goes, well, that's racing. And I said, well,
that's dating. Oh, sorry.
I said, well, I can't go back out there. I can't even push the gas pedal. My ankle's getting all swollen. She goes, well, we've paid for these armbands. And I'm thinking, we've paid?
I paid.
We haven't paid for these, okay? She goes, well, we've got to get our money's worth, so I'm going to go a couple more times. And I'm like, okay. So there was some bleachers you could sit on, so I kind of hobbled over to a concession stand and bought a Coke and just kind of sat there for the next 2.5 hours. She wouldn't stop.
You're kidding.
And she's being aggressive, driving that way around, knocking little kids into the wall. She got like three warnings. And the guy's like, one more warning and you're out of there. And when she finally decides she's had enough, she's got so much dust and soot on her face. I mean, she looks like Dick Van Dyke from fucking Mary Poppins, okay? And she comes up and, And I'm just like, what's
a chimney sweep?
I'm like, well, what is going on? She's like, she goes, and she points to this little kid and she goes, that little bastard, I could have beat him. And he doesn't race right. You know,
he's not fair.
I said, he's 9 years old. What are you talking about? So I've got such a swollen ankle. By this point, I've gone to the concession stand. I've got a bag of ice. I'm icing my ankle during this whole time. So we're limping. I'm literally limping out of the track.
Oh my goodness.
I'm in a lot of pain. Whatever alcohol I've drank has long since worn off.
Right.
And you know that I've been drinking and I'm not drinking anymore. I'm feeling a little groggy.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I think we should just go ahead and go back to Ocala. And she's like, okay, yeah, I guess we can do that. And so we get into her car, and this is where things took a real serious turn. We're getting ready to get back on the turnpike, and she goes, I really want a milkshake. Do you want a milkshake? And I said, I don't want a milkshake. She goes, well, I want a milkshake. And she pulls into this McDonald's drive-thru, and she goes, I'm going to get a milkshake. Do you want one? I said, no, I don't want any. And I said, all right, fuck it. I'll get a milkshake, whatever. I said, but here's the thing. You need to pay for it. She goes, what? What do you mean? I said, I don't have any more money. I've spent all my money today. You need to pay for this milkshake. And she goes, oh, fine. Now I'm like, you know, when you're really kind of like pissed off at somebody, like I've got my elbow on the side of the passenger door and I've got my face like on my hand and I'm just kind of looking out the window. Like I'm not even looking at her. I'm like, I'm really kind of disgusted with her. Like, yeah. How could you leave me for 3 hours with this swollen ankle and, you know, you're trying to run little kids off the go-kart track and I'm not paying attention. And she pulls up to pay for the milkshake and I hear the lady at McDonald's, the little McDonald's cashier, say, I'm sorry, do you have a smaller bill than that? And I turn and I look and she's trying to hand the lady a $100 bill. And she goes, I don't think so. Let me check. And she goes into her purse and she's got this Bank of America envelope and she starts going through it. And I stopped counting after like $700. Like this light, I just saw red. I said, well, hold on a second now. You've had that much money on you this entire time and you haven't offered to pay for this one thing? Are you fucking serious? Is this really happening? She goes, well, you know, you just started paying for it, so I didn't want to say anything. Take me home. I want to go home right now. The longest drive of my life. The longest hour-long drive of my life. Every time she'd try to talk to me, I would just say, I don't want to talk to you. I don't have anything to say to you. She's like, I need gas. I'm like, well, you've got plenty of money.
Yes, you do.
So, and she didn't stop for gas. She just kept driving, you know, and she just, instead of stopping for gas, I just kind of, out of the corner of my eye, watched that gas gauge keep going down and down. I said, this girl's going to run out of gas.
Just out of spite.
Out of spite. And I'm going to have to call a cab. And I don't have enough money to take a cab ride home.
From halfway from Orlando.
So when we finally got back to the car, got back to Bennigan's, and I got out of the car. She goes, well, what's, and I just got out and I just slammed the door shut.
Ooh.
And I just, for the rest of like the year that I continued to go to Bennigan's, if I saw her, I would purposely sit on the other side of the bar. And every once in a while, and this is what I thought this was kind of funny, is the bartender would come up to me and say, this next drink's on Laura. And I said, no, thank you. No, thank you. Even if I only had $20 on me and like she wanted to buy me a drink. No, thank you. I don't want anything from her. So that's my...
So Laura is exactly how you do not go Dutch and actually how you do not take for granted a chivalrous man.
Yes.
Because absolutely. It's just rude. It's rude.
The whole point of that story was this wasn't a date.
Exactly.
This wasn't, you know, she said, why don't we go to Orlando? And I said, that would be no different than if you and I said, let's go to Orlando.
Right.
Okay. Sure. You would probably pick up a bar tab. I would probably pick up a lunch tab. And it would just be like, okay, cool. All right,
Shared expense.
I'll get the next one.
My car, the expense of my car. Yeah, pay for gas.
You gave me a ride to Orlando not too long ago. I paid for gas. I paid for tolls. Exactly. It wasn't even like when I said, can you give me a ride to Orlando? I said, before you even answered, I said, I'll take care of all the expenses.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, I thought that's what I was going on. And I just, and then, you know, I was broke for a couple of days because.
Oh, God, it was miserable.
And then my roommate's
left
like,
a bad taste in your mouth.
My roommate's like, hey, you got rent? I'm like, well.
Kinda.
I got a few bucks, you know?
I got some of it. Yeah.
So, that's not, having said all of that, if I was to ask a girl on a proper date, I would certainly.
Plan to pay for it. Understood.
But if there's a lesson to be learned here, it is. And it's an uncomfortable conversation to have with somebody, especially if you don't really know them. Say, look, if we're going on this outing, are we splitting the cost on this? Because you don't want to look cheap.
Are we allowed to say that, though? That's, I mean, that's the question. That's really the question.
Because I didn't have the balls enough to say at Chili's.
Well, because you were 26. Yeah, I mean, you just don't have the balls then. But today you could, right?
Today, first of all, now you're asking the wrong person. Because if I'm ever presented with this scenario where one of my coworkers or someone says, hey, let's go to Daytona or let's go anywhere, let's go to Universal, I'm going to be like, okay, let's talk about this a little bit more.
Did you just... Say it again.
Okay.
Talk about.
Let's talk about this a little bit more.
The Canadian just came out in you.
That is true. I've been suppressing that Canadian accent for 20 years.
You did good, but it slipped.
It does come out every once in a while. But, you know, I would literally, like, lay down the law and say, here. Okay, exactly. Here's the deal. Here's what's going to happen.
You're older. You're wiser. Like, that's the difference between dating a guy who's 26 and dating a guy who's 39, right?
Absolutely.
You know what you've got in your wallet. You know what you're willing to spend. It metaphorically, you know, figuratively, and, you know, in reality.
So let's take a look back at everything we've discussed and what have we learned over this past hour-long conversation. When it comes to online dating, I think the quicker you can get real-life communication, i.e. speaking on the phone.
Right. Get off paper. Get off chat. Yeah. It's not about how you look, you know, on your profile. It's about what is the rapport actually built on. Is there rapport?
Exactly. And you're not going to discover that rapport through text messaging.
Ever.
That's not going to happen.
No.
Also, there is some serious theater etiquette, but you can check out the How Is This Movie podcast to understand that one a little bit more.
That's great.
You should never, if you've been drinking, you should never go over to someone's house that you've never met before.
Especially if they collect squirrels.
There could be a chance that they're harboring some animals without a proper license.
Mm-hmm.
So that's there's a chance that that could happen. If, you know... So, okay. But what we've learned is that a lot of older men prefer younger women, but I've made the argument it's because there's a lot less work involved with that. That's my position on that one. We've learned that it's important to establish fiscal responsibility when going with a friend to a location.
Right.
I think we've learned that.
Yes. And above all, what I really think I've learned at this age of my life, and you as well, it sounds like, is that in this day and age, it's okay to be single.
Absolutely.
It's okay.
Yeah, no.
There's nothing wrong with us, you know?
I think more and more people are starting to realize that the quote-unquote society's rules that dictate that we're supposed to do a certain thing. I mean, we all know that's all manipulative marketing that's been going on for 100-plus years. You know, it's so funny you mentioned that because one of my coworkers said to me yesterday, and this is absolutely true, She's younger. She's 23 or 24. And she said, you're single, Dana. I said, I am. She goes, no kids. I said, nope, no kids. She said, you're not in a relationship. Have you been married? Are you divorced? I said, no, I'm not. She said, but you're 39 years old. Why aren't you married? Why don't you have kids? Don't you want kids? And I said, well, guess I probably do, but I'm not in a hurry. And I looked at her and I said, who's telling me that I have to do this?
Exactly.
She says, well, I'm in a relationship. I've been in a relationship for 4 years. We're getting married so we can have kids. And I'm like,
awesome.
I said, that's great.
I'm very
happy for you. She goes, but I think it's weird that you're almost 40 and you don't want to get married and you don't want to have kids. And I said, well, I didn't say I didn't want those things. I said, I'm just not actively seeking them right now because there are things that I want to do. And if it's selfish of me to say that there are things that I want to do first, so I can maybe get them out of my system, then I would be happy to share my life with someone else or not. It doesn't matter. The question is, do I wake up every day in a good mood? The answer is yes. Do I wake up every day feeling sorry for myself? The answer is no.
Perfect.
Do I see do I interact with people that are in loving relationships and get a little envious? No, I'm happy for them. And I'll look forward to maybe that happening to me, but I don't dwell on it.
Right.
Because it's an important thing, but it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is just being yourself and being happy.
Exactly. I second that. The most important thing is to be happy, be okay where you're at, and to just be you. Dana, this has been awesome.
Yes, I agree. Thank you, Ray.
Super awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing those stories with us. I know Sometimes they're a little, feel a little revealing, right. But I think it will make perfect sense on my show. And you know, you can find Dana Buckler's podcast on iTunes. Help me out here.
Well, I like to say you can find the podcast wherever podcasts can be found. We're pretty much on every platform that podcasts are available. You can also follow me on Twitter. You can follow the show on Twitter at How Is This Movie. Facebook page, facebook.com/How Is This Movie. And don't forget, you can also follow Ray's show on Twitter at JustBeYouPod. And you can find her episodes. They're available on iTunes. Getting ready to put them on Stitcher and some of the other platforms. And you're 10 episodes in. And that's a big deal. That's one of the first mini milestones that you're going to have in this podcasting adventure. They say that if you make it past 10 episodes, you're going to move forward with it. There's a lot of podcasters out there who get to 6 or 7 and they just feel like they're not getting the numbers they want. They're not getting the listenership they want, or they've genuinely lost interest in the topic that they're talking about. But when you hit 10, like this episode is 10,
this is 10,
then it just kind of, it's all gravy from there.
All right.
So I'm really happy to be a part of what you're doing. Now, again, the credit for the Just Be You podcast goes all to her. I mean, she is the writer. She is the producer. I just do a little bit of editing here and there. But
yeah, you do great work, Dana.
But it's 100% her show, her concept, her ideas. I'm just happy to be a part of it. So thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dana.
A club isn't the best place to find the lovers, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends sat at the table doing shots, tripping fast, and then we talk slow. Come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. Come, come on now, follow my lead. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. And last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. Well, I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I.
Just Be You podcast is written and produced by Rayanna Morrow and co-produced and edited by Dana Buckler of Hidden Productions in Ocala, Florida. You can always contact me with questions or comments at justbeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Links to all of our social media are available on this episode's show notes. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and or leave a review on whatever podcast platform you use to listen. Once again, thank you for listening to the Just Be You podcast.